Midlands today with Tullamore Motors Opel, where the Mach-E is in stock and available for immediate delivery. Start your electric driving journey today at tullamoremotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
They usually talk to Will Faulkner, but for yesterday and today, you're going to have to do it. David Hollywood sitting in for Will once again, Mr. Faulkner, under the weather. So we're wishing him a speedy recovery. The government cost of living supports has been announced. Were you catered for? Do you agree with what's been provisioned for? Opposition parties wanted to see more for renters and mortgage holders. What did you want to see? Are we spending enough or are we spending too much on the social welfare department? We'll begin our discussion on those issues when we pick up the papers shortly. It is also important to point out today that it is Pancake Tuesday. How did the batter making go this morning? Are you going to have to wait until this evening? Or is your workplace putting on something for you? I know if you're part of a professional institution that has a big budget for staff treats or whatever it is, sometimes they bring in kind of a chef and a fully complimentous or a fully free kind of arrangement. And well, no fear, that's going to be happening for most of us. You're going to have to go home and make it yourself. What is your preference? We were talking about fluffy or thin prior yesterday, and I suppose we could talk about toppings today. No, let's talk about more serious matters. We're going to get through the papers very shortly. Be it pancakes or indeed the cost of living crisis and everything in between, 083 3010 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Let's catch up on this morning's news and see what's in the papers shortly. First up, let's run you through what's coming up on today's show. You'll be brought to New Zealand for two stories of ultimately unimaginable tragedy. One very singular and personal, and another widespread and total in its destruction. I'm talking about the tragic death of a young Midlands man and subsequently then the damage wreaked by Cyclone Gabrielle. Do you know anyone who's driving currently uninsured? I think many people listening might know one or two who can do those psychological gymnastics in the way that they justify certain actions. What does your friend say to excuse themselves? Is it a case of, oh, well, the insurance industry is what it is in Ireland, why should I play by the rules? We're going to lift the lid on just how many of the cars you share the road with are uninsured shortly. Health matters with Emmett Walsh as well today, a little bit later on. Your queries in, again, that number 083 3010 103. You can call us on 0818 300 103. So we will be hearing from Emmett Walsh later this morning. Also today, for the women listening, how safe do you feel when you're out and about in the Midlands? Does that change when it gets dark or when you're in certain places over others? The Joint Policing Committee in Offaly carried out a review of these questions. This is, of course, all in the context of the death of Aisling Murphy. The councillor that chaired the group that produced the report will join us just before 10 o'clock this morning. And now we can move on to the papers. A €100 child benefit bonus and a €200 lump sum for social welfare recipients under the cost of living measures. Those are the headline policies, as it were, in what is a slimmed down package compared to those that went out over the winter. So similar to the Christmas bonus payment, pensioners, carers, those on disability and working family payments, lone parents and those on the widow's pension will receive that €200. In addition, those in receipt of the back to school clothing and footwear allowance will receive €100 extra. It's understood that the Social Protection Minister, Heather Humphreys, also secured an agreement for the expansion of the Hot School Meals programme in primary schools to a tune of €27 million. But I suppose, can you put a cost on keeping children fed with warm meals? You'd have to say no. The social protection measures due to be given the green light after today's cabinet meeting have a running cost of just under €500 million, €400 million, which is understood to be within the expenditure ceiling for the year. It is very hard to get your head around the numbers that we're dealing with. There's been uncommon revenue when it comes to corporate tax take, and the revenue department generally doing very well. But on the other side of the ledger, as it were, there is just untold sums of money going back into society simply because it's not really functioning properly, is it? We've got so many challenges in this post-pandemic world that we're living in, and it's costing us to keep many things on the road. We're going to be spending $122 million for additional child benefit payments and $265 million for that lump sum that's going to the social welfare recipients. And like I said at the top of our show here this morning, I'd be interested to get your perspective. If you're in receipt of these payments, or even if you aren't, do you think this is money well spent? The Social Welfare Department is offering that kind of security net to everyone in the state. But that being said, can we afford it? These are questions that people are, in fairness, rightly asking. The discussion around the meeting last night was apparently very robust in terms of excise duty cuts. To excise duty were due to be scrapped from next week, which would have resulted in petrol increasing overnight by 23% and diesel by 18%. Concerns were raised about possible fuel shortages if prices were going to jump overnight. Therefore, it was a proposal was changed into a three-stage restoration plan with a pause for any increase, a pause of any increase for 3 months. So for the next 3 months, your fuel will not be, as per the state's policy at least, be affected in terms of price. On the 1st of June, petrol will go up 6 cent. The 1st of September, it'll increase by another 7 cent. And then on the 31st of this year, rather the 31st of October of this year, it will go up by 8 cent. So 6 cent on the 1st of June, 7 cent on the 1st of September. And on Halloween, you'll be getting an 8 cent hike in that respect. Diesel will also increase pro rata on those dates as well. There'll be no additional €200 electricity credit for all households following the March payment, so you've got one more payment left that's coming up in March. There's the 9% VAT rate. So this is interesting. It seems like all the balloons being brought up by government or being let up by government was to the tune of suggesting that the VAT rate was going to be squashed, or rather the opposite of squashed, I suppose, inflated back to 13.5%. Pork Brown was in with us last week, a Tullamore businessman and an accomplished restaurateur, I suppose you'd say. And he made a really compelling case. I think personally, I was quite neutral on the prospect because that hospitality VAT rate doesn't affect me professionally. I am a punter, though, so it's going to have that knock-on effect. And I have to say, Pork's explanation of how the consumer ultimately would be passed the expense on, because restaurants, particularly of the scale of a medium or small-sized one, deal with such small margins in the first place that if they were to experience an extra, 4.5% tax on their VAT rate, that would end up affecting the bottom line for customers as well. And if customers get turned away anymore from these places, do we really think that they're going to survive the next number of months? So this current situation is the VAT rate will be extended until October and will go back up to 13.5% after 6 months from now. Following concerns over the uptake of the temporary business energy support scheme, I know that we had one of our Midlands TDs, Peter Burke, who is, of course, a junior minister as well, said that he didn't think the system was working as intended. Changes are going to be made to allow more businesses avail of the supports for their energy bills. The lifetime of the scheme will be extended and the criteria is to be changed. So that is going to get a rewrite as well. That's a flavour of some of the details and changes within the cost of living supports that were signed off on or agreed upon last night. They're going to be signed off on today. In the Irish Independent, Robin Schiller has written that newly engaged couple and a teenager have been charged after a spate of burglaries on golf clubs across four counties in 1 week. The court has heard properties in Galway, Westmeath, Tipperary and Offaly were targeted. This is Tullamore District Court that the hearing took place in yesterday morning. A newly engaged couple and a teenage recycling plant worker have been charged in relation to a series of golf club burglaries across the country. The court heard that, as I said, these properties were in
Galway, Westmeath, Tipperary and Offaly, and were allegedly targeted over the last several days, over the course of the last week. Three Romanian nationals were yesterday charged as part of the Garda investigation into the break-ins between February 11th and 16th. Mother of three, Michaela Callan, 34, who works as an Amazon delivery driver, was charged with two counts of burglary, while her fiancé, Daniel Manea, was charged with 11 burglaries. Tullamore District Court has told the couple arrived in Ireland last week and immediately started committing burglaries. A third accused, recycling plant worker Daniel Matsai, 19, is charged with 17 counts of burglary. And we'll move on to our next story. Just to get down to the bottom of what happened in that hearing, Judge Andrew Cody remanded the accused in custody with consent to bail subject to a number of conditions, including a €5,000 independent surety, and that she signs on, this is in relation to the lady who works as an Amazon delivery driver, in relation to that she signs on three times a week at Ashburn Garda Station. Judge Cody refused bail on several grounds, including the nature and seriousness of the charge, saying that detective's opinion was well-founded. That detective's opinion was in relation to Daniel Matai, the 19-year-old. He was the owner of a Mercedes that was allegedly used in some of the incidents, and that he was identified as a passenger in a vehicle travelling through the M6 toll bridge on the night of three burglaries. He says that the accused was driving the car when arrested. Judge Cody refusing bail on several grounds for him. We move on to the Irish mechanic. This is a tragic story, and one I previewed a little bit earlier in our introduction. Tributes are being paid to a 25-year-old man from Leash who died following a freak accident in New Zealand. Sean Clear is from Ballacullagh. He died late last week after a tragic accident while working. It's understood Mr. Clear, who was a mechanic by trade, was working to retrieve a bogged piece of machinery when overhead lines were struck. He's a member of a well-known GA family from the Ballacullagh area. Mr. Clear played hurling all the way up through the age grades with Clough Ballacullagh and went on his travels last autumn. And that's the story, isn't it? You know, a young man sets off to do, like so many young men and women in Ireland feel the graw to do, which is to see the world, to get beyond our island. He was a past pupil of the Ballacullagh National School in St. Fergus in Rathdowney, a former graduate of Salesian Agricultural College, and has been working in New Zealand since last autumn. His dad, Tom, is a current member of the GAA Club in Clough Ballacullagh and recently a vice chairman. And in terms of the tributes, the current chairman of the club, Gordon Pearson, says the club and community are heartbroken at the death of the popular young man. He said, "We as a community, as a club, were deeply saddened over it. The nicest young lad you could ever meet," said Mr. Pearson. And that tribute is printed in the Irish Independent this morning. Moving on to another story in relation to GAA, but significantly different, it has to be said. Simon Carswell is writing that a former sports star approached GAA figures seeking money. And I'm sure once you've heard those words, you have an idea of the story that this is in relation to. A retired player stayed rent-free in a house for 14 months, resisting removal efforts after claiming to need the property for just a few weeks. The former GAA star, under investigation for alleged fraud, approached at least one backroom staff member connected with his former county and other local GAA figures seeking money. Those approaches are understood to be among a significant number made by the retired player, who is accused of taking large sums of money from people for specialist cancer treatment. The Garda National Economic Crime Bureau is investigating whether the retired player deceived friends, acquaintances and business associates into lending him money for medical bills. It's understood that a builder gave the sports star use of this unfurnished house for what the GAA man claimed would be a period of just 3 to 4 weeks while he awaited a move into a home that he'd bought. 14 months later, no rent paid, left a large electricity bill unpaid, and despite the owner putting the sports star under sustained pressure to move out, it seems that wherever this former GAA sports star went, in his wake was a trail of false statements, debt, and by the looks of it, an alleged fraud. And this story unfortunately. It's very sad. It's going to run and run and run. Let's look into the details again of the slimmed down cost of living package. The Irish Times and Jack Horgan-Jones write that the reduced bonus child benefit payment forms part of that slimmed down package. We don't have the electricity credit, as we said. A reduced bonus of €100 per child on top of child benefit is going to be paid as part of those ongoing measures. We're starting to get messages in relation and reaction to the new measures. It's naturally something that's going to affect everybody. Something that mightn't affect everybody but is on its own merit rather interesting. That is that an observatory in Roscommon has recorded 40 sightings of what? UFOs. Now, I don't think it's the UFOs of the Mulder and Scully variety. Dr. Eamon Ansborough says that the sightings were picked up at the Kingsland Observatory in Boyle over a 22-year period. So it's not what you'd call breaking news this Tuesday morning. He told the Irish Daily Mail that sightings of the mysterious objects usually come in waves, which is a massively discouraging concept. We are seeing these things come in waves. I don't want to hear that. US military have recently shot down a number of items or objects that were seen in US and Canadian airspace, one of which was allegedly a Chinese spying balloon. And personally, I hope the rest of them were too, considering the alternatives there. No, obviously, there could be relatively innocent explanations along those lines because we have many things ending up in the air these days. But what goes up must come down. In the Irish Times, Owen Burke Kennedy is writing about Revolut customers who continue to be targeted by scam messages. Revolut's really interesting in terms of being a service, isn't it? Like, it's had uncommon growth, probably among a specific demographic, but in terms of ease of transfer and that type of thing, it's had a leg up on a lot of the banking apps in its infancy, let's say. So an increasing number of Revolut users in the Republic are falling victim to a convincing scam text message that appears to be from the payments app. The text, which asks customers to verify their details or face having their accounts frozen, contains a link. So look, at the end of the day, you can still revert back to the safest perspective when it comes to scams. Don't click on the link. This one contains a link that brings users to what looks like a legitimate Revolut page. Obviously, it's a well-fashioned mirror of the website. The scammer then uses this as a way to trick customers into putting their Revolut pins. That's the issue. When you click on that link, it brings you to a faux site that is purporting to be the same site. And as soon as you go to sign in, you've signed away your personal, private, and obviously bank details there. So bottom line, don't click on links, especially when financial institutions contact you. They're at pains to say themselves that they don't ask for your details and they won't ask you to click on links. In the Irish Times, Ed Power is talking about the super agers. They're going to be profiled, they were profiled last night on RTE1. I actually wanted to watch this and could not hew out the time to get down to it. I just thought that the characters involved looked really compelling. Apparently, the show avoided the obvious pitfall that comes with exploring the experiences of older people, which is to treat them like huge wrinkled infants, which is well written by Ed Power. That's the thing that would give you pause for thought. But Donal Maloney, the director, was apparently never condescending in his treatment of septuagenarians and octogenarians, whom he shows living their best lives at the outer limits of the aging process. And I suppose this morning it's worth asking you, do you know someone who is a super ager? What is it that they do? What's their secret to that vitality? Because I think we could all tap into that, considering how much we sometimes feel like we're on that the hamster wheel, and we might be only half or three quarters of the age of some of these super agers, but maybe they've got the answer. And I would be very grateful if anyone could send in the answer to me. I'll relay it back. See, this is the virtuous circle that we got going on here. We're getting down to the back end of the pages here and the papers. Shortly, we're going to be talking about those uninsured drivers on the roads. Leash Jobs Fair offered a broad range of openings amid an employment market shift. 40 companies and more, and organisations offered tons of Midlands-based jobs in areas ranging from accounting to engineering and from retail to recycling. Emmett Malone gives us the rundown in the Irish Times. Healthcare and hospitality among the sectors that were recruiting in the doors of the Laois Jobs Fair. Midlands 103 were there, of course, but beyond that, there was plenty of fun to be had. It looks like the event, all being told, was a big success. And hopefully, it's an interesting change of dynamic. Of course, I remember growing up in this country, and it wasn't the staff that you struggled to get; it was the jobs that you struggled to get. But now it seems like we're back up and running. We just can't get anyone to take those jobs. Very good morning to you. You're back with David Hollywood once again. Will Faulkner, slightly under the weather, will be back in the hot seat. We're going to crowbar him back in as soon as is possible. Now we're looking at the question of motor insurance. Insurance is expensive in this country. I think we can all relate to that. And maybe one of the reasons is that we've got a lot of uninsured private vehicles on Irish roads, and it's a problem for the industry. And ultimately, it comes down and funnels back to the consumer and is a problem for the Irish road user. David Fitzgerald, CEO of the Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland, joins us to look at the issue. David, how are you keeping this morning?
Not too bad, David. Thank you.
Good. Tell me, by how much has the number of private uninsured vehicles in Ireland on the roads increased by in the last year?
It's increased by a shocking level. It's up more than 32,000 vehicles over the last 2 years, up to almost 188,000 uninsured vehicles on Irish roads. That's one in 10 vehicles driving around uninsured, David.
That is, it's a massive number, or a massive proportion, I suppose. So why is this happening? Obviously, there is incentive for those looking to avoid paying insurance, but why is it the case that this is a problem that's getting bigger and bigger?
Well, we think the solution is through enforcement, David. That, you know, we built an Irish motor insurance database that contains details of all the insurance vehicles, the insurance on all the vehicles in Ireland, and that can be used to drive an uninsured list. So one of the things we're calling on when we see these alarming figures is that the Oireachtas Fast Track, the Road Traffic and Roads Bill 2021 that's been slowly making its way through the Oireachtas, that contains provisions that will give us a safe legal basis to pass that information to the Gardaí. We're anxiously waiting on it. They have technology in the roads policing cars and in handheld devices that can automatically read motor vehicle number plates. They call it automatic number plate recognition technology. If we can pair that technology with this database, we think that'll be a powerful tool for the Gardaí to crack down on the level of uninsured driving, because it's way out of kilter with the rest of Europe, David. If we look across the UK, we have twice the level of uninsured driving as the UK and four times that of France. So, you know, clearly something needs to be done.
What are the consequences that we're talking about here to the situation that we've currently got in the country, with the exception of the obvious, which is that the people themselves who are uninsured or unprotected, if they get into an incident, as it were? Talk to me about the consequences beyond the individual who makes the decision, let's say, not to pay their road insurance.
So we step in and compensate the victims of accidents caused by uninsured and untraced vehicles. So we pay out 70 to 75 million per annum to their victims. We're fully funded by the motor insurance industry, so that results in a levy of 30 to 35 euros going on everybody's motor policies. So we're all paying for people who are choosing to drive uninsured. So it's a big problem. We really do need to crack down on it, David.
Have we got certain specific demographics, groupings of people that are more likely to be somebody who does avoid paying insurance in these instances?
So when we look at the demographics of the type of drivers that are causing our claims, unfortunately, they tend to be male drivers between the ages 18 and 30. So that, you know, that's very much a demographic that we target via social media and sites that we'd be interested in to explain the consequences of being caught driving uninsured, which are very serious. The Gardaí can seize the vehicle upon the spot. It's an automatic court appearance. It's 5,000 penalty points. It's a substantial fine of up to 5,000 euros and indeed up to 6 months in prison for egregious repeat offenders. Plus, after we've compensated the victim, we have the right to go after the uninsured driver for the cost of the accident, which can be very substantial. A personal injury, you know, the typical personal injury claim that we would see, you know, cost us 60 to 70,000 euros to compensate the victim. So even if the uninsured driver isn't in funds at this time, that debt hangs over them. So, you know, it prevents them getting a car loan, a mortgage. If they come into funds down the line, you know, those funds can be diverted to fund the cost of the accident that they've caused. So it really isn't worth taking the chance, would be my message for anybody who's thinking about driving uninsured.
A final question then, David, is you mentioned that it's legislation that will ultimately address this issue. Have you got an expectation of a timeline or a hope in terms of a timeline that this will move through the Houses of the Oireachtas and be something that the industry can lean on?
I'm hoping that the legislation will pass by Easter before the Oireachtas arises for Easter. So that's, you know, part of the reason, you know, we're raising the publicity around these figures is to put pressure on the Oireachtas to, you know, explain the importance of why they should prioritise that legislation. So it has been in the Oireachtas for quite some time. It is making progress, but we'd like to see that passed with urgency so we can get this this information over to the Gardaí and aid them in enforcing this this level of uninsured driving, which is way too high, and that we're all ultimately paying for. You know, it's a road safety issue, and it's also a cost of insurance issue.
David Fitzgerald, CEO of the Motor Insurance Bureau of Ireland. Thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, David. Bye-bye.
Next up, we're going to be looking at the issue of gender-based violence across the Midlands, and thereafter we get to the news centre and back again. We're going to be looking at the cost of living measures, and the phones have been lighting up. The messages are coming in. There's many people who have a perspective on the cost of living announcements, and we're going to catch up on all that after we get past 10 o'clock and beyond. We are about to move on to a serious question about how people feel in the Midlands, be it at night or in certain areas, based on their gender. And I'm telling you now, it's not necessarily a fair situation. A couple of messages coming in. Stop insurance companies extorting people. Ireland is the most expensive country in Europe to own a vehicle, from an unnamed messenger there. Much appreciated. Caroline in Birr says she knows a car in her estate that's being driven daily with no tax or NCT. And that is driving her mad. We're going to move on, as I said, to look at this issue of gender violence in the Midlands. It's not long over a year since the tragic death of Aisling Murphy. Since then, though, there's been good work that's been done. And one of the people very much involved in doing that work is Green Party councillor for Offaly County Council, Mark Hackett. Mark, I very much appreciate you talking to us this morning.
Well, thanks, David, and thanks for inviting me on the show. Thank you.
Not at all. The report of the subgroup to the Joint Policing Commission in Offaly on the safety of women and girls and all that are at risk of gender-based violence in public spaces. This review was carried out following the death of Aisling Murphy. The subgroup was chaired by yourself with 8 members. You carried out a number of surveys as well. Can you talk us through what were the most striking things that you've learned along the journey here?
Yes, well, I suppose, look, we went out and did our surveys. We had Offaly Safe Day back on the 24th of June, held in Burr Eaton Derry. In Burr, we had Councillor Claire Claffey led out on that, and in Tullamore, we had Councillor Neil Feary and myself in Eaton Derry. Look, we asked people basically, one of the main questions was a very simple question: do you feel safe in Offaly? And we asked, say, on respondents for that, we had 137 respondents, and 79 said yes, they do feel safe. So that was very positive, and it's what we expected, that people do feel safe. Now, on the other hand, we asked people, do you feel safe at night in Offaly in public spaces? And unfortunately, then on the other side, we had 198 respondents and 136 said no. So that was concerning. But I suppose that's just another thing we found that was, I suppose, concerning is we asked the question, have you experienced gender-based harassment in public amenities in your area within the last 5 years? Now, to that, we had 23% of people said yes, and all 23% of them were female. And of those females, 1 in 3 of them said it was by an ex-intimate partner. So that was quite interesting, because it just shows that intimate partner abuse follows that person into the public realm. It's not just in the home, it goes out into the public realm as well. So, like, that was an interesting finding there. And obviously we find things like members of the minority communities like the LGBT plus and the traveller community also shared experiences of gender-based harassment in public spaces.
What are the things, Mark, that can be done to start addressing this? So you've mentioned a number of really interesting aspects there, and obviously we can't just breeze past the fact that most people say that they do feel safe generally in Offaly, but there's too many instances where that's not the case. So we've probably got a couple of different things to do here in terms of messaging, communication, how we're raising younger people, how we engineer our public spaces, all those kinds of things. Was there anything that came out of the report, surveys and reviews that's given us a new direction of travel there?
Yeah, well, I think you really hit the nail on the head there, David, what you said. It is. It's education. Education is key. So, like, getting out there and, like, one of our recommendations were that all Offaly County Council staff, all councils, all councillors and all members of the JPC get further training on basically minority groups and gender-based issues. Also, we have issues where we were saying to roll out workshops in schools throughout Offaly. And I was asking Offaly County Council to support this, where the children can get education towards, I suppose, using appropriate language. And like, obviously, we have a large influx now of foreign nationals in the country, and just how we communicate to each other and how we refer to people. It's very important that we, like, no one intends offending anyone, but you can do by just saying, by not being educated. So that's what it's all about, education. I suppose on your other point there, you mentioned about the guards. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
No, you're fine. Yeah, we were talking about, and you've done really well to give us the clear details of how we can communicate to the younger generations, how to move things on and improve them. And then I suppose one of the other things that has struck me thinking about the issue is the question of feeling safe when you're out in public spaces. What can we do to help people, be it at night or during the day? You know, we just want to be able to be free and walk where we wish throughout day and night without any sense of fear. And it's become normality to be wary in certain places and at certain times.
Yeah, well, I suppose the things, again, what I'm asking Offaly County Council is like to support the nighttime economy in the lines of, like, the more people we have out and about walking obviously makes people feel safer. So, like, we delved into issues like lighting, which, to be fair, Offaly County Council work very hard on having a good lighting system throughout the county. So there's always improvements. On Garda Síochána are working at the moment on increasing the CCTV surveillance. Okay, that's coming from sort of more central government level, but hopefully there'll be improvements in that going forward around the Tullamore area anyway. So I suppose they're really the things to make people feel. You need more footfall. If you have more people out and about, I think that makes people feel safer.
Okay, so it's not necessarily about creating defensive structures almost to make things safe. It's actually more a case of making spaces more inviting for masses of people to gather in those dark moments at night and that type of thing, because that's where people genuinely feel safe is when they're in with a crowd of peers.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think we must stay positive and we must basically look forward. I wouldn't like to go down the thing of thinking of putting in more precautions and more safety issues. No, I don't think we need that. I just think we need to get more people out and about and more people, I suppose, in my opinion, getting back to the old ways, when you're out for a walk, like when you meet someone, salute them and say hello rather than have your head turned down. And like, it's always nice to say hello to someone and greet someone. And that's, I suppose, what I would love to see more of is I'm brought up in the country where you drive along the road and you salute every car you meet. And I my kids all think it's funny, but it's just, I think we should go back to that again, and everyone should salute people and say hello.
Yeah, well, I think it's striking. I know I moved to the Midlands a short while ago, and it has to be said, the general disposition of the general public member or member of the public when walking past is that they all default to say hello. It's a really, like you say, it's a reassuring experience, isn't it? You have a brief moment of human connection, and therefore the place you're walking through also kind of has that moment for you thereafter, and that's what we want everybody to feel ultimately.
Exactly, exactly. Enjoy and be aware of the space you're in, and that's what I think is key going forward to happiness.
Councillor Mark Hackett of the Green Party, you did great work with this report for the Joint Policing Committee in Offaly, and I very much hope that the work you've done and those members on the subgroup gets carried out and that we get to a better place with this stuff. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning.
No, well, thanks very much, David. I suppose just lastly, I'd just like to say thanks very much to all my fellow councillors for their support. And obviously everyone on the subgroup, they worked really hard. And look, we're very proud of what we've achieved. And now let's get those recommendations. Recommendations are only as good as the commitment to their implementation. So let's get them implemented. That's the main thing. Thank you very much, David.
Councillor Mark Hackett there. We're heading over to the Midlands 103 News Centre very shortly indeed. Just want to give you the opportunity to win a pretty tasty prize. This is with courtesy of Tullamore Court Brasserie, and they are giving away a free three-course meal for two people every day this week. If you want to win, midlands103.com, go to the win section of the website or get it through Facebook and fill in the form to be in with the chance to win at the end of the week. We're going to upgrade one of those winners to a three-course meal for four people. Now, we've had people offering their perspective on the cost of living announcements that have been delivered to us today. The working middle is the one that's getting taxed to the hilt. People have to work 60 hours in 5 days to make ends meet, struggling to pay mortgages and other bills, and they're only getting an extra 100 quid per child for the children's allowance that's been allowed extra. Much appreciate that message in from an unnamed messenger whose name I might be able to get to you at some juncture. Beyond that, there's plenty saying, echoing those thoughts on the squeezed middle, as it were. I'm very glad to say, to look at the cost of living measures, we've got a member of the opposition party, Sinn Féin's Brian Stanley, TD for Laois Offaly. Brian, in terms of the measures that are announced today, highlight for me, will you please, the one that you're most satisfied with as an opposition party.
Well, look, the increases, David, is you know, they're welcome. The increase in child benefit, the one in welfare payments is welcome. There are problems though, and you know, your listeners will know this. When we're talking about the squeezed middle, we're talking about people who have no disposable income left halfway through the week, people where there's, in a lot of households where there are two people working. And unfortunately, you know, while the measures, some of the measures are brought, that are brought in are welcome, the government have missed the target. Workers have been badly let down here. Renters have been badly let down. People who have mortgages, which have been pleading with government to give some relief to those people who are paying mortgages, typically people who are, you know, trying to keep a roof over their heads, they have faced huge increases. And if you take the increase on the tracker mortgages, the average increase there over the past 8 months from last June has gone from just over 1%. Now it's heading over 4%. And we put, you know, we put proposals to government, cost proposals in this regard. And it's really, you know, it's stretching people to the last. And, you know, a lot of people now are simply borrowing to keep up with bills. And you can only do that for a certain length of time. I think that's what's really disappointing about it is that if you take somebody in the Midlands, typically, where they have a mortgage and they're working, they need a car to get to work, or where there's two people working in the household, they are increasing, they're facing, you know, sharp increases in fuel costs. The facts are is 21%, 21 cent on petrol over the coming period, on top of carbon tax increases, which are due to come into effect again this year. And that needs to be factored in. And there is an affordability issue there in terms of trying to meet that and all of the other costs, the energy costs as well. I think that's one of the other ones disappointing is the fact that they haven't done anything on energy. We've had a lot of talk about windfall taxes. That hasn't happened. And the government have been dragging their heels in this, waiting for everyone else in Europe to do it first to see is it okay to do it.
In terms of energy, Brian, they have reprofiled the energy support scheme. This is the business energy support scheme. That's been altered. There's a new upper limit, and the structure of that generally looks like they're going to make an attempt to improve that. But that's probably the standalone energy thing that we can point to, and it's for business as opposed to the regular constituent.
Well, the measure for businesses, the change in that scheme is very welcome, because we have highlighted to them that the scheme as it is hasn't been working. The limit did need to be increased, and the percentage increase also needed to be modified, so as more small businesses across the Midlands can benefit from that. And we welcome that. That's fine. The problem is that they haven't implemented the windfall tax. Again, this week we've had announcements of record profits from gas companies. They haven't decoupled the cost of electricity generated from gas from that's generated by wind and other renewables. So you have some companies making absolutely skyrocketing profits. That hasn't been tackled. And we're not naive enough to think that any government can solve all of these problems or can keep up with, you know, the cost, the wholesale costs and retail cost increases right across the economy. We know that. But what we're saying here is that there's a cohort of workers, people who are in the middle and below the middle, you know, middle and low income workers who are really caught here. Yeah. And if they're paying mortgages, David, or if they're in rented accommodation, they have got no relief here. There's a measure that could be brought in, and we have pleaded with them to do this. It doesn't cost the government anything. It's to bring in a rent freeze. They could do that. On top of that, we've asked them to give 1 month's rent back in a tax rebate, an 8.5% tax rebate over the year, which would mean one month's rent back. They brought in a limited €500 credit. That's welcome back in the budget. We welcome the fact they've done that. But the reality is that rents across the Midlands now for your standard three-bedroom house, people are being asked up to 15 and 1600 euros per month. It's not 500 euros.
And I know your party have been very consistent on the rebate perspective. Bear with me now for a couple of seconds, Brian. I'll ask you one or two questions in short order here. Off the top of your head, do you know the overall bill that we've got for this current cost of living package?
Yes. Well, what the estimates are, based on what's been leaked to the media, is about 1.2 billion.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what it is.
Okay, so
1.2 billion plus.
Taking that into account, 1.2 billion plus probably a bit extra on top. The policies and measures you're talking about, and I'm not saying that renters and those who are paying mortgages and those who are squeezed in the middle, they're working a job each in a household, and you know, ultimately what's fair is fair, and they should be able to make a go of it in life on that basis, just on paper on that basis. It's not the case at the moment. So if we were going to move our support scheme supports over to that cohort of people, then are we able to sustain a bigger packages bill with the state's finances as they are, do you think? Or naturally, are we going to have to lose some of the other supports or measures that we've taken? Because obviously, they're all imperative to a certain group of people.
Well, what I would say to you is that, of course, no government can solve all of these problems and can flatten out all of these, you know, can alleviate all of the increases. We understand that, and we're saying that quite clearly. We are saying we can go a bit further here. There is a limit. What we're saying is that you can go closer to 2 billion, because if you look at the state's finances at the moment, there's a balance there, a surplus there of 1.72 billion. That's what's expected in the rest of this year. There's 2.77 held in reserve at the moment, and if you look at it, that means that between 1.1 billion and 1.2 billion is now left unallocated, and there's 1.72 available. So, you know, it'd be very modest to go to about 1.9 billion. That's well affordable at the moment. You can't go much beyond that, because you have to keep some in reserve, and we're clear on that as well. We don't want, you know, you can't throw all your money out in one go, and you have to prepare for other shocks as well, and we do need to be keeping some in reserve. So we do need to be modest about it. What we are saying here, though, is that there are measures that can be taken. The windfall tax, for example, you know, will not bring in as much in this country as some other European countries. We recognise that, because, you know, a lot of the generation isn't done, electricity generation isn't done in Ireland. But a significant amount of it is. There's also the retail companies, the companies that are actually retailing it. And, you know, they're making excessive profits at the moment. And what I would say to you about that is that there are, you know, that there's a transfer that could be made there that could be used in terms of easing the shocks on the electricity prices. That could happen. So the facts are is that, you know, the people who are being caught here with high mortgages, the people who are being caught here with high energy bills, the people who are being caught here with high transport costs to work right across the Midlands, they are really facing into a very difficult period
here. They're still getting
caught. We would like to see more done on that.
What about the excise duty on petrol and diesel? It's being phased out rather than coming off a cliff edge, as it were. Would Sinn Féin have a different policy on this basis?
We have said that. We have said that in relation to it. And we would keep that at the level that it's at for a longer period of time, along with the zero excise on home heating oil. We keep that till the end of May, which would cost $23 million. And stop the carbon tax increase. That's the one we would hold back in May. That's a $77 million cost for the rest of the year. We have costed that based on figures from the Department of Finance and the home heating oil one. That would certainly help matters. But as I say, you can't stop everything. The really disappointing thing here is for renters. The really disappointing thing here is for mortgage holders. And what's really going to be difficult is the transport costs, in terms of as those reliefs on transport fuel, on petrol and diesel are taken off. And on top of that, you're going to have layers of carbon tax put on that over the year. That's what's really going to push people over the edge in a lot of cases. And I think that there's also a group that we put in a cost of measure in our proposals for. It's those people who are on working family payment. And that's typically workers with children who are on a low income. And the working family payment, some of your listeners maybe might remember it as called family income supplement. It goes to those workers whose income is below a certain level. We've asked for them to be included in the fuel allowance scheme, which would have cost, for this year, would have cost $16.6 million. And that would have been a very targeted measure, not a terrible high cost measure, $16 million, well affordable, that would have targeted them, would have helped them out and got them through a fairly difficult period while energy costs are so high. That could have been done. But look, the measures that are coming in, any relief is welcome. The one for business is welcome in terms of the energy support and some of the other ones. But unfortunately, there's big areas there that have been left out where measures could have been taken. And I'm afraid that the government have missed the target on this one.
OK, well, Sinn Féin have made their position clear in that respect. Brian Stanley, thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning. We're going to take a breather and then we're going to get the perspective of the government on this. Junior Minister Martin Hayden was in touch with us about the government's announcement. You get his perspective and that of the government that have ultimately put together this latest programme of cost of living support package. Martin Hayden in a few moments' time. Very shortly, we'll be joined by Emmett Walsh for Health Matters, medical herbalist. Get your queries into us, 083 30 10 103. You can message us on Midlands 103 smartphone app or indeed at Midlands 103 on Facebook or Instagram. You can email to studio@midlands103.com. We're looking at the cost of living support package that's going to be announced today, that was signed off on yesterday. Sinn Féin's perspective, we just got a few moments ago. Very much focusing on those who've not been provisioned for. Renters and mortgage holders are still being squeezed and not getting the supports beyond an extra €100 payment per child for the child's support in that respect. What about the government? Fine Gael's Martin Hayden, Kildare South TD and Department Junior Minister in the Department of Agriculture, and he has spoken to us, telling us that the government wants to support people, but they still have a budget to manage.
Recognise the pressure that people are under with the massive increase in costs of living that has happened in the last year. We are approaching now the first anniversary of Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine, and on top of the impact of the pandemic and the impact on supply chains around the world, we have seen a massive increase between those two events on our cost of living that has led to a lot of inflation, and that really has put a squeeze on people. And what government has looked to do, like we did throughout the pandemic when we had €9.2 billion worth of intervention, a support scheme, where we had the pandemic unemployment payment, employment wage subsidy schemes. We intervened at that stage to support workers, to support families and to support the most vulnerable. In our last budget for this year, we introduced a social protection budget that was a record budget of €2.2 billion, the biggest ever in the history of the state, exactly targeted at the most vulnerable and supporting people across the country in those elements. So the support and today's decisions by Cabinet isn't a one-off. It's part of that larger support scheme. Some of those measures that were introduced like are universal. So the likes of the child benefit system, there's plenty of people in this country who work, who pay their mortgages and who work really hard. And the only support you get from the state is the child welfare. And I know how well received that double payment was last autumn, around November time, which is an expensive time for families and people with children. So again, we want to continue to support people as well as the likes of the energy credit, of which we've had six of those payments so far, or three of those payments so far, and more to come. We'll see exactly what the detail is finally agreed by Cabinet today in terms of the next measures. But we also want to make sure while we continue to support people now and get them through this difficult time, that we have enough money in the kitty and we manage the economy prudently so that we can have a type of budget next autumn like we had last year, which anecdotally to me, you know, from my constituents around Laois and Kildare, really did have a very big impact, positive impact on people and helped them get through the winter.
That's Junior Minister Martin Hayden on the support packages announced by the state today. And of course, I think a point that Brian Stanley of Sinn Féin made prior to our hearing from Martin there was a good one, in that we don't know what's coming down the road, and we don't know if this winter that's just gone will be the most difficult winter, or indeed if it's going to be a feature of the future. Very shortly indeed we're going to be hearing from the medical herbalist Emmett Walsh. Get your queries into us, they're coming in thick and fast, so thank you in advance for those. Stay tuned and see maybe if one of your issues or conditions can get resolved by simply listening to the radio. That is why it's the best media that you can spend time interacting with.
Health Matters on Midlands Today with Haven Pharmacy Butlers in Birr. Expert knowledge for you and your family's health, built upon 90 years of experience serving the Birr community. Find Haven Pharmacy Butlers on Main Street in Birr and on social media. Expert care made personal. Midlands 103.
I've got Emmett Walsh in with me for Health Matters. Just to circle back to a point we were making just before we broke for a song, Gavin Jane's upcoming dates over the summer are worth mentioning. Great live gig, playing in Cork and Wexford as well as Belfast. So you've got three on the island to go to there. As I said, Emmett Walsh is in, the medical herbalist from Roscorra Clinic in Blueball, Tullamore, and he's on hand to talk you through your queries in relation to all things health related. Emmett, how are you keeping today?
I'm okay, David. Thank you.
Good, good, good to see you. Thanks for coming in to us. And the first query we've got in is from Mark, who texted us asking about a child who experiences epilepsy, and he's wondering if there is any medical resolution, herbal resolution, I should say, to that.
Well, I'm not going to say that there's a herbal resolution because I'm actually prohibited from saying that. But I can definitely assure everyone that there are things which can be done on the herbal medicine line, plus physical therapy interventions that can make a huge difference.
Okay.
I haven't done any experimentation. All I can do is base my experience of treating epilepsy in situations where there was a dramatic change in people's lives, and in one case where a person suffered a stroke with consequent epilepsy events, numbering anything from 10 to 20 a day, to reduce that down to maybe one every 6 months.
That'll make the whole world a difference to
that,
somebody.
That makes the whole world completely different for those people. Now, neither am I saying to stop taking the herbs that are, the medicines that the doctor prescribes. We can work with all of those, but there's you have to be trained in this, and you have to have the experience in this. So I would not advise people to go along and do their own thing. This needs expert herbal medicine input.
Yeah, and I think it's always important to highlight that aspect, that whatever counsel is given, always going to official sources for counsel and recommendation is the way forward. Jimmy and Burr has a six-year-old that's started to suffer with psoriasis, but particularly over the last number of weeks. So have we got anything we could do for Jimmy in that respect?
Okay, a six-year-old with psoriasis, that should likely be treatable.
It's not uncommon, is it?
It's common.
Yeah.
More than likely, Dietary input has a very significant factor in this, and almost invariably these people with skin conditions, they're going to have to change their diet, and most people don't like doing that. It's not easy.
As a trial and error, then it's not trial and error.
Okay. It's basically you stop eating junk food. That's number one, and eat nothing, only for a while cooked vegetarian food. There may be other things. The condition may be aggravated by gluten. There may be a superimposed temporary aggravation from dairy products, but it depends. It depends on the history that you would take. It depends on you. We may be able to identify a trigger. Sometimes the trigger for this can be antibiotics.
Yeah.
So, in that situation, you might definitely have to, or you might have to get in some kind of a probiotic to counter or to help normalise or re-normalise the gut flora. The microbiome, as everyone refers to it.
So if Jimmy's listening and... He might have an idea as to whether or not his child had been on a course of antibiotics recently, so it could well be in that direction. But a simple approach and solution for this issue, if it arises with any parents and their children, is look at the diet, and if there's junk food that can be cut out, start there.
Yes, and if the child is 6 years of age, the child should be told what to eat.
100% agree with you on that as the parent of a seven-year-old who likes to debate these issues.
Yeah. Yeah, no debating for a six-year-old.
Yeah, agreed. Like,
you know, a parent is a parent because they're one of their main things is to help and guide the child. A six-year-old is not able to make those discerning decisions at 6 years of age. That they will be led by their palate and by the urges which these common processed and junk foods trigger in the child, in the child's brain.
I mean, and ultimately, they're being manipulated in that respect, aren't they?
Absolutely.
The products are designed to trigger them.
I'm glad you were saying it, not me.
Yes, I'm sure I'll get pelters from somewhere for it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's actually really helpful to know and to understand, I think, for everybody. And that goes beyond psoriasis in that respect. Maureen from Clonmelon got in touch. She says she's suffering from insomnia. It's been a long-standing issue, but she finds that when it comes to... moments where she's most anxious, the insomnia becomes quite difficult to deal with over the course of three or four nights in a row until I think she eventually, you know, naturally it overtakes her and she does sleep. But is there anything along those lines for insomnia in terms of her?
Well, based on what we have, I mean, there are so many things that can contribute to insomnia. But based on what she has said, I think she's let the cat out of the bag. Anxiety is the real problem.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily...
It is very treatable through herbs in most cases. First of all, you have the sources of the anxiety, but then what happens to the person is that they fear the fear of anxiety coming, and they fear the fear that when they go to bed, I'm not going to sleep. They say that to themselves. Whereas if you can hit the anxiety earlier in the day and control that, it's like the asthmatic with the inhaler. Once the inhaler is in the person's pocket, they feel way more comfortable mentally.
And then less likely to suffer from the symptoms of it.
Yes.
So it's psychosomatic in a way. There can be.
But I mean, you know, is this woman drinking too much tea, too much coffee? Is she drinking these things too late? Is she drinking too much fluids, which is causing her to get up at night? Has she a persistent UTI, which can, disturb her sleep at night? Is she taking medications, which can disturb her sleep at night? Is there somebody snoring beside her? You know, there are so many things but the fact that she mentioned, and she knows already, that anxiety worsens the insomnia.
Yeah,
that's the solution, more than likely.
And is there anything you can say in terms of tackling anxiety?
Probably a little bit of meditation, but very little. You know, one of the big mistakes that's made with meditation in this country and throughout the West is that they do too much of it.
Really?
Yes.
So it's less is more in that respect?
Well, in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, if you have somebody that's disturbed and get them to do a half an hour or an hour of meditation, you'll make their anxiety and their unease worse.
So it would be a case of, if you're just looking at meditation initially now for the first time, let's say,
2 minutes in the morning, 2 minutes in, just before you go to bed.
Almost a pause rather than meditating.
Yes, and really what it is being conscious of how you breathe. Your breath, that's all you're really doing in 2 minutes.
And you build up maybe if
you can build up gradually
then.
As you go along, yeah.
Okay, great stuff. We've got one messenger in who's saying that they're suffering from IBS, a digestive system issue, of course, there, and they're looking for something to tackle irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay, if you look up many of the medical books, you'll see that IBS is considered pretty well an incurable condition. I'd completely reject that. Okay. IBS is one of the easiest things to treat. And I love IBS patients coming because I know I'm going to have an almost 100% successful outcome.
Wow.
What you need to do with the IBS is everybody's IBS is not the same. So there's constipation dominant IBS, there's diarrhea dominant IBS, and there's alternating constipation and diarrhea IBS. So you need to identify which type of IBS it is, and other things as well. The diet is just hugely important to try and re-establish again normal gut flora. And with IBS, you have the development of an extremely unhealthy gut flora. And one of the things about herbs, probably the people have never heard this before, all herbs are probiotics. Every single herb is a probiotic. And not alone that, herbs through their genes can influence the genes of the person themselves. That's a big part of how herbs work.
Very fundamentally affecting them.
Yes.
Very interesting. Okay. Your questions and queries to the medical herbalist, Emmett Walsh, will be back very shortly with more answers. The medical herbalist is here to answer your questions, and we're going to move back onto them very shortly indeed. Just a reminder of the competition running today, running all week, courtesy of the Tullamore Court Brasserie. What's up for grabs? That's the most important thing, of course, and that is a 3-course meal for 2 people, and one of those will be upgraded to a 3-course meal for 4 people. So you can double date it up, or indeed bring the family out to the Tullamore Court Hotel. The question you're wondering is, how indeed do you win? Go into midlands103.com, the win section of the website, or get it through Facebook and fill in the form to be in with the chance to win. Emmett Walsh is in studio with us this morning to answer your questions, medical herbalist. Emmett, we've had somebody write in relation to, now this isn't very specific, so I do wonder if you can help this guy. An anonymous listener says he's always feeling extremely tired and achy. He's wondering if there's anything we can do for him this morning.
Okay, with that kind of a classic frequent presentation, the immediate diagnosis probably that will be given in many cases to these type of people, unfortunately, is fibromyalgia. Now, if the guy is tired and achy, well, you ask yourself, where does the energy come from? So if he's not able to produce energy, he's going to be tired. So if he's not able to produce energy, he has an ineffective or very much underperforming digestive tract. And if that is the case, he's going to be producing toxins, which are going to be dumped all over the body. And if that's the case, toxins take 10 times more energy to deal with each unit of weight of toxins as compared to a unit of digestible food. So he's going to, these toxins are over many years probably are going to cause aches and pains. For example, if you're not fit, you get the build-up of lactic acid. It immediately causes aches and pains all over, well, especially in the muscles that are working, the legs especially. And that's just an example of one toxin, which is very, very common. So in a situation like this, lactic acid will probably be one of them, but among hundreds and probably thousands of others, and then you have the toxins interacting with each other to cause new toxins. So it's a waste of time to try and identify the toxins. Just eat well, eat simple, go through a period of cleansing your body for a period of a couple of months. There are herbs which are there to help with that. You know, something like berberine is a good or berberis is a good example. Even chamomile, mix them in. And if you have a dodgy tummy, throw in some marshmallow or something like that, just to cushion the blow of the more severe and bitter.
Okay, so when you say clean out the system, it literally does that, does it?
Well, it will help that, yeah. And the other thing that he might have to do is do a bit of intermittent fasting for a while. That's dependent on his ability to be able to do it. He may not be able to do it.
Now, intermittent fasting is in many quarters is celebrated, but I do know that it has almost a triggering effect for other people. It's something that needs to be handled with the correct information, I suppose.
Well, yeah, everybody isn't suitable for intermittent fasting. A pregnant woman isn't. A growing child isn't. Somebody that's weak, somebody that's recovering from some kind of an illness isn't. Somebody that has diabetes may likely, it definitely wants to be handled by professionals.
Okay.
There are many cases where intermittent fasting may not be appropriate. But for the vast majority of people, intermittent fasting is one of the most important things people can do.
Okay, and it can help in that cleaning out process, and it can re-stimulate metabolism and that type of thing.
It can, yes. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Now we've got a question here from Mary in Burr, and I'd say we might have other listeners who can relate to this. She's experiencing itching all over, which is caused by perimenopause. Can we do anything to set Mary right in this respect?
Okay, so just to define perimenopause for everyone. Perimenopause is the time before complete cessation of the menses, so that they're going to get, if they were irregular, they're going to get irregular. If they were heavy, they could get lighter, or they could get heavier. So it's that critical time before the cessation of the monthly cycle. One of the main things that happens in the menopause is that there is a change in the way glucose is metabolized in the body. So any woman that's perimenopausal, if there is any problems, one of the things, first thing she should do is stop eating high refined sugar foods. That's the first thing. But fundamentally, the cat is out of the bag when she says, with the information that there's itching all over. This indicates with almost 100% certainty that there is a sluggishness in the liver. And if that's the case, well, then you give appropriate liver herbs, and it will very likely help to ease off the itch and help her to get through the menopause as well. Herbs to consider would be, unfortunately, if I was in the six counties, I could prescribe this herb, which is St. John's wort.
Right.
Now, there are other herbs as well, other good liver herbs. But one of the supporting liver herbs that would definitely be considered and used in most cases, and in this case as well, for where there's a situation of liver congestion or whatever, and under-functioning liver function, is milk thistle. Milk thistle is extremely safe and very, very good. It protects the toxins from getting inside the cells, and then you have the other more bitter, and the likes of berberry and even chamomile, they can get inside the cells and help to clear out from inside the cells.
Milk thistle, did you say?
Milk thistle protects the cell membrane,
and that can be gotten locally
over the counter sales, yeah. And then there are others that you can get. Just go into your head food shop and ask whoever is working there, will you give me something for my liver? I want to try and cleanse my liver. But don't do anything robust. Okay, if there's something robust being done, get advice on it, proper advice.
Okay. Emmett Walsh, medical herbalist, Ross Cork Clinic in Blue Ball, Tullamore. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
And of course, Emmett will be back next week with Will. Now, New Zealand are saying that rebuilding after Cyclone Gabrielle will cost billions of dollars, and it'll be on par with the Christchurch earthquake from 12 years ago. It was Valentine's Day of this month of February that Gabrielle brought widespread flooding to the North Island in New Zealand, leaving untold damage, and so far 11 people have died. Thousands, however, have been left uncontactable. Donna Flynn is on the line talking to us this morning. Donna's sister Debbie had her home destroyed in that cyclone. Donna, I think the first question to ask, and thanks for taking the call off us this morning, is how is your sister Debbie? You've obviously been in touch with her. Obviously devastated at what's happened to her home, but she's okay otherwise, is she?
Yeah, they're okay, thankfully.
Okay, I mean, it's a absolutely mind-numbing thing to have happen. You obviously knew your sister was there. When news of Cyclone Gabrielle broke, had you been in touch with her? Were you left waiting?
We had at the beginning been in touch with her, and she was door okay. They were safe at the time. And then we got a text to say that they had to evacuate. And then from there, it was a good 24 hours, I'd say, before we could get in contact with her again, because they had no power. So they weren't able to charge phones or anything.
And in that instance, you feel every kilometre of distance between the two of you in that regard. I understand as well, your mother was over there visiting Debbie not too long ago either. And it goes to show just how close and far away we are as family when these things happen.
Yeah, my mum is actually still there. She was there. She had gone out just before Christmas. So she was actually staying with them when it all happened. So she's at the minute, they got her a flight over to Auckland to cousins of ours to stay with for the minute, because Deborah and Corey are actually staying in a tent in Corey's mother's backyard at the moment.
My God. Talk to me about what happened to the house itself.
They had to actually canoe back in to see what damage was done. Yes, it's devastating. They've lost everything. They were only just a year in the house. They've only built it, renovated, and they just had finished. They had moved in Christmas of last year. And they were starting the garden. They just got all the plants and paint to do the outside work. But they literally finished their decking this Christmas.
And, when you're putting the finishing touches to something, I think there's that great inner sense of satisfaction they must have been getting. What brought them over to New Zealand originally?
Corey's originally from New Zealand. He's from New Zealand. But Debbie would have travelled a good bit and then had met up and moved home and then packed up everything about 6 years ago and moved over.
And at the moment, as things stand, they're bound to a tent, and that's going to be the case for how long, do you know?
God only knows. They were back there today, which would have been our time today. That last night, they were evacuated from the house again because there's a storage plant beside them and it's leaking. And it may burst, so they were evacuated again out. They can't even clean it. They were in the middle of cleaning it up, trying to clear it out.
And this obviously has probably kind of stopped the country in its tracks, and anything that's close to the affected area probably barely resembles kind of modern civilization at the moment then.
Yeah, nothing has opened. They couldn't get diesel to drive my mother to Auckland. They had to fly her over. The bridges have been washed away. They can't get out of Hawke's Bay. They're just kind of stranded in that area.
And in this instance, they're looking for some and any help that can be offered in that respect. I understand there's been a fundraiser has started.
There has, Corey's family has set up a fundraiser, givealittle.co.nz, just in hope that they can try and salvage, just get a little to live somewhere, I suppose.
Well, that's it. There's no kind of putting into context how you go from finishing the decking in your back garden one day to today being bound to a tent with no prospect of a structure over your head that you own again for a long time. So that would be more than a decent cause to give in that respect. Donna. And is there any expectation on your side? Are you going to get to see your sister? I imagine you must be missing her more and more over the course of this last week since this has happened.
Yeah, definitely. We were lucky in the sense she was only home there in September.
Okay.
She'd been home September of, say, 21, because my dad had passed. And then she came back for the first anniversary, and she actually got married here on September gone when she came home. So we had spent a lot of time that time, thankfully. But now, at the minute, we're just trying to get my mother home. So that's really the main thing at the beginning, to get her out of there.
That's the first priority. And then it's about getting Debbie and Corey back on their feet as soon as possible, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly. Because she's on her own out there, she's kind of nervous and that. So if we try and push on getting her home and then sort Debbie out, we'll be trying to do as much as we can from here. Just with all the distance, as you said, it's very hard.
Yeah, even communication, isn't it? I mean, if something occurs to you in your mind, oh, I'll send Debbie a message, you then have to double check yourself and go, no, she won't be getting back to you for 6 to 12 hours or whatever. It must be a dislocating experience. Kind of feel like part of you is out of reach in a way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, I know everyone here in the station, and of course everybody listening, is sending their best wishes to both Debbie and Corey, and that Give a Little fundraiser is available online if indeed anyone wants to give more than that. Donna, for the moment though, thanks so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, Donna is Debbie's sister. Debbie's home was destroyed in the cyclone which hit New Zealand on the 14th of February. It's only the third time in New Zealand's history that the country has issued a national emergency declaration to speed up rescue and relief efforts. At the last time was in the aftermath of the Christchurch earthquake. Thankfully, it looks like in terms of the death toll or things like that, that's not the kind of zone or territory that we're veering towards with this particular story. But it just goes to show, when Mother Nature turns, it's merciless, unrelenting. And it seems to be more frequent that those in the quote-unquote developed world are being exposed to more and more of this. We will next be looking to the skies, or compelling those of you listening to look to the skies. Have you seen any UFOs in Roscommon lately? We're going to be talking to a man who has. We're going to move on to something that is on paper possibly quite weird, but in reality, I am sure it is less worthy of giving us pause for thought. Dr. Eamon Ansborough is the director of Kingsland Observatory in Boyle. This is a Roscommon observatory that has recorded 40 sightings of UFOs. And Eamon, thank you for taking the call off us today. This is over a 22-year period. What is it we're talking about when we talk about UFOs, beyond the obvious unidentified flying objects?
Hi, David. Good morning to you. We actually located instrumentation here back 23 years ago. And the reason being is that Boyle and the Lockheed area has a high frequency of UFO activity. There's only one other place we've come across back in the 90s, and that was in the southwest of Ireland in Bantry. But we've got very good data, which we've got published as well. The type of things that have been recorded would be unusual shapes, you know, dumbbell type shape, you know, so you'd have like two balls with a connection in between showing up, and that was in the daytime. We've recorded a cylinder as well, which was shown on the Late Late Show way back certainly about 20 years ago anyway.
Mm.
And we have recorded a triangular type shaped objects, but a lot of the other objects frequently would be balls of light. So very interesting. We haven't actually figured out what it all means, but it's all very interesting.
So what we've got are certain instances of shapes being detected and other instances of bursts or balls of light. In that context and in your experience, what are the things that we're likely seeing or that are likely being picked up on, even from a I don't want to say an uninformed perspective, because it's certainly more informed than ours, but it sounds like to a degree we're always going to be dealing with mysterious objects here.
Well, we're dealing with unknown type objects, and you have to realise that this is a 24/7 monitoring going on. It's not a situation where you just go outside in the hope of one of these objects might turn up. They might turn up, of course, but this is 24/7. And in that, we've recorded about 40 sightings altogether of we'll call them UFOs because we can't identify them. So we're still learning from this, and it's still developing as we go along.
They're still unidentified, ultimately.
When you take out, when you eliminate, helicopters, aircraft, birds, even, the ISS, the International Space Station, to satellites, to meteors, fireballs, space debris coming in, you can differentiate all that, and then you're left with a very unusual constructs like triangle cylinders and dumbbell-type shape.
Can you put that down to anything yourself? What's your conviction about this?
I really don't know.
You're supposed to reassure us here. This is suddenly becoming quite. this is suddenly becoming quite an arresting discussion. It is that unknowable. Has the observatory technology improved over those over the years, over the 22-year period?
Yes, I actually introduced infrared cameras as well. There's actually 11 cameras in total. They're all sky cameras, based on a program that can identify, any object that would appear. And then there's two tracking platforms. They're about 150 meters apart, and if an object is seen by the all sky system, then the other two platforms start moving into position to get a triangulation for the distance of the object, in question.
Okay. And this comes, of course, in the context or at a time when the US were dealing with their own objects in the skies. One seems to have been confirmed as potentially a spying balloon for the Chinese, but Joe Biden came out subsequently and said there were a number of other non-threatening entities that are floating over the skies. Just how much stuff floats over our airspace that the man on the ground or the woman on the ground is unaware of, but is par for the course otherwise? Quite a lot by the sounds.
You know yourself that every country is spying on each other, and of course there's all sorts of technology for that. And probably in Ireland's case, which is a neutral country, we may have assets here that wouldn't be so important as compared to the UK. So it's going on all the time. It's been going on for decades. It's surprising, actually, that they're using balloons. I would have thought that you'd use satellite imagery because it's a lot more sophisticated now than using balloons. But, I'm no expert in that area. So.
Well, Dr. Eamon Ansbrough, you've been very good to take our call this morning. And I suppose you've put anyone ill at ease further ill at ease. And that's no bad thing either. But thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're welcome, David.
Dr. Eamon Ansbrough there, Director of Kingsland Observatory in Boyle, which has observed 40 sightings of UFOs that still today remain unidentified flying objects. In the last 30 minutes of the show, we're going to be paying tribute to a young man who died on the shores of New Zealand over the course of this week. Text or WhatsApp us on 083 3010 103, and we'll be able to get your views across the Midlands and relay them back to you across the Midlands. Now, tributes have been paid and they will continue to be paid to a young man from Leash who died following a freak accident in New Zealand this week. Sean Clear from Ballacullagh died after a tragic accident while working. It's understood he was retrieving a bogged piece of machinery when overhead lines were struck. Sean was a mechanic by trade, but we're going to hear now that he was also very much had his roots in Gaelic games, the GAA, Laois GAA and Clochbalacolla GAA, to be specific. The PRO and secretary of the club, Niamh Delaney, joins me now. Niamh, from everything we know about Sean, he loved Gaelic games, and I imagine the heartbreak that's experienced across the community in Ballacolla is hard to describe and sum up. But can you give us an insight into the kind of gentleman that Sean was and the impact that he had and his loss will have?
Yeah, how are you? So I think you used the perfect word there. He was a gentleman. So Sean was heavily involved in the GAA club, younger up to minor age, and then his love of agri and machinery, I suppose, took over. And anyone from a farming background will know that in the summer months, it's hurling or farming. They don't often tie together when silage has to be cut and corn has to be harvested. So Sean's love of hurling, I suppose, was put on pause for his love of agriculture, and he was a mechanic in agriculture by trade. So he stopped hurling with us at minor level, but was always there in the background. He came back then a couple of years ago and would have played junior hurling with us. I think his last game was against Clannad, a lovely summer's evening. That was his last game with the club, but his family will be heavily involved in the GAA and in Laois GAA, as you mentioned. His dad, Tom, is a former chairman of the club and vice chairman of Laois GAA. His mum, Julie, and his sister, Ella, will be heavily involved in the Camogie Club in the parish. His mum, Julie, is the registrar with the Camogie Club, and Ella herself plays minor and junior Camogie. So the whole family will be heavily involved in the GAA, even though Sean himself stopped playing in the last couple of years to pursue, I suppose, other areas of his life. But just the heartbreak and the shock around the community, I suppose, is the biggest thing. We all got news of it on the afternoon of Friday, and it has just rattled everybody. And I suppose the whole community now is trying to pull together to help the Clear family and to look after them in the coming days and weeks, because we have no update yet on when Sean will arrive home to his family. So we're just trying to get them through the next couple of days, and people have really got together. It's a great community, and I suppose that's where the GAA comes back. There's not much else in Clochbalacolla, only GAA. So any scenario like this, whether he was a hurler or wasn't a hurler, the GAA community and the wider community will just get behind whatever is needed and help out where we can, I suppose.
And as you say there, solidarity is, it's the only thing, but it's also not nothing that you can offer, both as a community and, for instance, the club itself, Clochbalacolla, that Niamh, you're attached to. I imagine at a time like this, you start to hear of all the ways that Sean's life touched others from around the community as well.
Yeah, it's been lovely, and I suppose I wouldn't personally know him on a huge level, but as I got phone calls, and I suppose people automatically come to ring me to let the club know officially, I suppose, and just hearing stories, he loved Electric Picnic, as did the majority of Laois people, and the lads talking about how they'd head off to Electric Picnic together for the weekend, and there was funny stories about loading up cargo onto the top of cars and trying to keep everything secure just to get to Trabley, which is 20 minutes down the road. But he loved Electric Picnic. As I said, he had a love of tractors, love of cars too. You'd often meet him drawn silage in the summer, big wave and a smile from the tractor window. He worked for local contractors just down the road from his own home. So I suppose everyone has fond memories. I suppose what made it extra tragic was he should have celebrated his 25th birthday yesterday. So even across social media, lots of tributes paid to him on his birthday yesterday, and some lovely photos of people reminiscing where they should have been wishing him a happy birthday. And I suppose he was tragically taken too soon before his 25th birthday and beyond. But yeah, lots of conversation around his friendly, kind manner and just small memories from him. I know he was in a class of, I think two of them started in Ballacolla School together. The school is small as it is, but there was two in his class. So, you know, just some small, fun memories from a small community for getting people through the difficult days at the moment.
And do we know, he was in New Zealand, was it work that brought him over there, or he was travelling as people his age do, or do you know?
So he went working. So as far as I know, he was working with a farming contractor over in New Zealand. He went just in late autumn. He had previously been in Australia a couple of years ago and came home So he obviously had the bug for travelling, and you know, it's a great experience for anyone in the agri industry to get out and work on machinery, etc., to the stature that they'd have in the likes of Australia and New Zealand. It's a massive experience, and I'm sure he would have brought that experience back home with him. So he went with a couple of friends, and yeah, tragically, just an incident where the machinery got stuck and they tried to retrieve it, and just pure freak accident then with the electrical wires above it. So absolutely heartbreaking accident. It really, really was.
And it's what we've always done, Niamh. You know, your parents' generation, our parents' generation, our generation, and younger people have always looked to places like Australia and New Zealand and America to have those moments in your early 20s to develop themselves and their personality. And the tragic aspect of this is that the family, Sean's family, didn't get him back again, and your heart breaks into a million pieces just thinking about the effect that will have. All you can do at the moment is what you're doing, I suppose, and we wish you the very best, and we send our condolences to the family of Sean, who the father is Tom, the mother is Julie, Ella is the sister, and of course that wider circle. Niamh, for the moment though, thanks very much for coming on and paying tribute to Sean.
No problem at all. Thank you very much.
That was Niamh Delaney. She's the PRO for Clough Ballacolla GAA. The funeral arrangements haven't been made as yet because, of course, repatriation is a very difficult process. That's Sean Cleary, Sean Clear, I should say, died late last week after a tragic accident. Next up, we are looking to the situation in Ukraine and how the Irish state may be getting involved. The Irish government is considering deploying 30 military personnel to assist in an EU training mission for Ukraine. According to the Irish Times, they're being sought to provide specialist training in demining, combat casualty care, engineering and the disposal of explosives. Declan Power, security and defence analyst from Mullingar, joins us to look at this story. Declan, Is this the brand of military expertise that the Irish government can provide the EU for a training mission for Ukraine?
In a word, yes. Because there is a wide array of military expertise available throughout Europe that we can focus on some more conventional aspects of warfare and defence. And one of the things that the Irish Defence Forces has, I suppose, been considered to have reached a standard of excellence on was both EOD, which is bomb disposal, explosive ordnance disposal, demining. A lot of this expertise was gained from our time in South Lebanon with the UNIFIL mission, and indeed developing expertise along the border. It should be remembered that it was the Irish Defence Forces who developed a piece of technology called the Hobo, a specially designed robot with caterpillar wheels. It's now used all over the world in bomb disposal of a very high, sensitive and dangerous nature. So that's one aspect. And then also there are a variety of other things that I suppose you could call soft power skills. I was just talking to somebody quite recently who had extensive service in the Defence Forces in critical incident stress debriefing. He's retired now, but working in that area, and he's been asked to assist in some of those training and briefings. So there's a whole array of things that you wouldn't quite call a tip of the spear battlefield stuff, but then that's what the British, the French, the Americans and some of the other Europeans are supplying. So it's wholly suitable to what we can give, and it's wholly appropriate that we should be giving that assistance and expertise to our Ukrainian neighbours at this time.
This was going to be my next question, because we are, by fundamental definition, I suppose, if you were to characterise the state or the Republic of Ireland, we are a neutral entity. But that being said, we are aligned with many aspects of international diplomacy that aren't neutral. Ukraine is not neutral in their position, of course. And as an extension, the EU, who are looking to fast track membership for Ukraine, are very much involved in supporting the country in its war against Russia. So in this kind of hybrid version of neutrality, where, as you say, we're not the pointed spear tip, and we're dealing in kind of peacekeeping techniques that we've become expert in. Is there any danger that the concept or the reputation of neutrality can be compromised through this?
You said a lot there, and we probably need an entire afternoon to delve into it. I think, first of all, it's important that people realize that there's a lot of conversations go on about this concept of neutrality. In Ireland, we use definitions that aren't used or recognized either in international law or by any other countries. We delude ourselves, we delude others, and not always to our benefit. Somebody was trying to convinced me the other night that the Irish passport is great weight because of our reputation for neutrality. It didn't stop me getting detained for 48 hours by the Egyptians when I was traveling on an official Irish passport about 10 years ago. I'm just saying things are not often as we would expect outside in the rest of the world from their position looking in. So Ireland today is not what I would call a neutral country. It's a non-aligned country to an extent in that we're not in the military alliance, but we constantly talk about being politically aligned and militarily neutral. Now, there's no such definition in international law. The reality is we're part of an alliance. It's called the European Union. It's not primarily a military alliance, but it's an economic, political, and social alliance that has an evolving security aspect to it. But along the areas of soft power and lightly armed peacekeeping and peace enforcement, NATO is the bigger beast in the room. Now, NATO and the European Union have an ongoing, growing and developing relationship. So in many respects, it isn't going to really matter whether Ireland ever joins NATO or not. We already have a relationship with it through Partnership for Peace. I think what most Irish people really understand about neutrality and perhaps really want is if you deleted the word neutrality and replaced it with independence and course of action. That's really, I think, what people are most concerned about, that we retain a degree of independence in the choices we make. However, the irony of that is that most countries within NATO still retain that level of independence. In fact, Ireland has probably supplied more troops on NATO-led missions in recent years than some fully paid-up NATO members. There were small numbers of Irish troops in Afghanistan as part of the International Security and Assistance Force. There were Irish troops in the Kosovan force and in Bosnia as well. They were all NATO-led at some point. So this follows on. What you're seeing now with this training mission is a variation on that, a variation on the other training missions. I heard retired Brigadier General Gerard Hearn speaking on media recently, talking about the EU training mission to, say, Somalia. It was actually in Uganda. Mm. It was run in Uganda for the Somalian, the nascent Somalian armed forces. And the Irish presided over that. They led that for two terms. And this is a variation on that. So if we were to pursue, so I suppose the Irish state definition of neutrality is that we're not a fully paid up member of a military alliance that that assures mutual defence. And that's really where it starts and ends. As regards whose side are we on, I think it's very clear. I think our public representatives have already said that. And we seem to be, and this is where I think we damage our reputation. So we say all these things that we want to support Ukraine, and then we have this kind of squeamishness when it comes to military support. We're already supplying military support, just not actual offensive weapons. We're supplying fuel to their military, we're supplying technology, we're supplying medical support, body armor, helmets. You know, if you send a tank or if you send fuel for the tank, you're assisting the belligerents. Well, we're doing that.
This is the follow-on to what you're saying, Declan, because you've quite rightly pointed out there, we're not militarily aligned, but in so many practical ways, we might as well be in a lot of respects because of our membership with the EU. What about the other side of the equation? Because we have independence of decision-making, yes, within the structures that we exist in, but are we creating or making a target for our own backs by being involved? I suppose that is, say, for those who are strong on maintaining neutrality, whoever they may be, listeners or otherwise, the idea of remaining neutral to protect ourselves, is there any danger that someone like Vladimir Putin or those that are on the other end of our peacekeeping missions might harbour ill will towards Ireland in that instance?
They already do.
Very true.
And we already do. I mean, Even Sinn Féin were looking for the Russian ambassador to be kicked out. There was a cacophony of antipathy to Russia that arose from the invasion of Ukraine in this country, and rightly so. Now, let's scotch a few myths here. Neutrality does not protect you. History shows us that. There's a myth here that it protects us, and that myth has been provided for because we have a particular geopolitical location. We have been under the umbrella of NATO, and we were under the protection of the Allies in the Second World War. And indeed, we had a certain amount of assistance just through where we were actually located. The Germans would not have not invaded us and respected our neutrality. They invaded every other European neutral country that got in their way. And they had operational plans. They had an operational plan to invade Britain called Operation Sea Lion, and they had one for Ireland called Operation Green. Coincidentally. And they had two separate plans. They had one called Operation Kathleen, which was the invasion of Northern Ireland by airborne means. So this notion that if you ignore the nastiness of the world and you don't prepare to defend your territory and your people, that that makes you safe is ignorant in the extreme. And I would even equate it to criminal negligence. We're just extremely fortunate. Where I have an issue, people would say to me, though, well, why don't we just continue with being extremely fortunate? And I get that point. But where I have the particular issue is, if and when situations arise, and I don't think we're going to be subject to an airborne or seaborne invasion from the Russians anytime soon, despite what they tried to do down in the exclusive economic zone off the coast of Cork last year. I think what could arise is some sort of an evolving, fast-moving security situation where the NATO nations would, you know, quickly know that if the Russians were moving to the Western seaboard or to engage in some activity. And because we're trying to kind of walk both sides of the road in this situation and we stay aloof from planning and coordination, that we don't get any say in the matter and that we're just pushed to one side. It's all right, Paddy, we've got this, that kind of a scenario. And we abdicate our responsibilities. And people, again, usually on the extreme left, say, oh, well, nobody would listen to us anyway. Well, we have learnt over the last 30-odd years through our membership of the European Union that in rules-based organisations, small nations do get a say.
And that's very much played out
to be the case. I'm not suggesting we run out and join NATO in the morning. I'm saying that there are a spectrum of ways that we can, and indeed I would say should, develop defence cooperation arrangements, pool resources, engage in sharing intelligence. We're doing a certain amount of this, but it's kind of very ad hoc. We could have a thing called an enhanced opportunity relationship with NATO if we wanted. Other countries do that, such as Jordan, Australia. We could, through the European Security Compass and PESCO, develop a properly worked out system for undersea defence of the cables that come into our water. And we could have a more transparent agreement than what already exists between ourselves and the UK for policing of the skies.
There's
if we
no,
buy the primary radar, then we'll know what's going on and we'll be in a position to ask the RAF to come in, as opposed to it being the other way around.
There's no shortage of options, Declan Power, security and defence analyst from Mullingar, who said at the top of our piece that it's an extremely large question to deal with. But we got through a decent bit of it in 10 minutes there, Declan. Thanks very much.
We certainly did. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
All the best.